When you hear the word crash in property, everybody is terrified and scared. What was that part of your life like when that actually happened?
He was desperate. It was absolutely desperate on a personal level, because up to that, quite frankly, everything I touched had turned to gold. I'd done really well and I'd made a right few bob. But I mean, I had a wife, I had a mortgage, I had four kids. And at this stage, I was looking at having been wiped out, my capital gone, and what I was going to do for the rest of my life. I mean, it was absolutely appalling. And something as basic as not being able to do for my kids what my father did for me, for example, bought me a secondhand car. I couldn't do that. I couldn't buy a secondhand car for myself.
Okay, yeah. Folks, welcome back to today's episode of Platinum, our podcast. Today, we have got a very, very, very special guest in. And it's not just the journey that he's going to tell you about. I mean, this is the true meaning in my eyes. And I speak to a lot of people around the country of a true, true entrepreneur. And we don't mess with that word lightly. So today, we have asked Terry Gorry to take some time out of his busy, busy schedule to jump on board with us today to try and give us a bit of an understanding about his life, his career in business, and also his legal practice that he operates and owns today, and maybe a little bit about it, the history of Ireland as well, because he's done a lot of things and he's been in and out of many, many businesses. So, Terry Gorry, you're very, very welcome into Platinum.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a million. Well, look, I'm just going to run through a couple of notes that I have. You have an amazing story to tell. You have amazing grit, determination. And as I play with that word entrepreneur, in my eyes, when I read your backstory and I follow all your stuff online too, you're the true meaning of an entrepreneur. So for a young person maybe listening in, I know a lot of young people listening in and a lot of people getting into business a little bit later on in life. As Terry goes through his story today, you will understand that you can reboot, you can reshift gears, and you can retrain at any age of life. Well, I'm not going to say any, but I mean, Terry done this in his 40s and went into a bigger career. So Terry, just to run down through a couple of little things you do, and anyone that wants to read your bio can jump over to the website. You started and growing a business from the age of 23 with your brother. Sold that business on to then another brother. So there's a family of entrepreneurs there somewhere. You bought shops, petrol stations, pubs. You worked on construction sites. And when I say that word, work on construction sites, you worked on construction sites like I do. You pulled, dragged, got the shit done.
I was the main developer actually on that particular site that we mentioned earlier there in Edgewestown. So just to go back, I mean, I started off in retail at, I was 23, myself and the brother started in the retail game, and we worked very, very hard at that. Closed up shop, developed it, worked hard, worked 17 hours a day for about 2 or 3 years and flipped it. And fairly quickly, you know, you recognize that there's a certain amount of money to be made from retailing, but in this particular case, most of the money was actually made from flipping the property. In other words, developing the business, driving the turnover up, and then flipping it. And obviously, you're selling on a ready-made business for somebody, but you're also getting the benefit of the property appreciation and so on, and whatever value you might have added to it. So I did that for a few years, from say 86 to about 89, 90. And then my father wanted to retire out of a petrol station in Enfield here, and I bought that business off him, and he retired. And then I ran that for a few years, developed it, did a deal with one of the oil companies, and then decided I'd get into property development. And this was shortly before the Celtic Tiger situation. So bought the site in Edgewestown, developed it, built 8 apartments, and then the market crashed. So with the crash in the market, everything I'd done up to that, which had been relatively successful, was out the window, quite frankly. So I had to reboot, as you say, and see what I was going to do. I had no capital. nothing. So I went back to college at 41, 42 and did the legal exams, got into the law society, became an apprentice solicitor at 42 or 3 and qualified then a few years ago and set up my own practice. So along the way, there's been ups and downs. I've been involved in retail development, retail units, residential development, built a few, obviously developed the apartments in Edgertown and built a few one-off houses, and would always be messing around with property because generally it's a fairly safe bet, you know.
Yeah. So just taking me back there a little bit, when you say you had all these different businesses, you tried, like an entrepreneur would do, loads of different businesses. You obviously tried that world retail. That's a really, really difficult, hard, grinding business to own.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Well, my background, my family would have a retail background. So, I mean, I did a Bachelor of Commerce degree in UCD and then didn't want to work for somebody else. Worked for somebody as an accountant for a brief period of time. And then this opportunity came up. But completely by accident, and it was completely by accident that I bought the property. It was closed up. The previous guy had gone out of business, but I saw a bit of potential, and that kind of it worked really well. But we worked very, very hard. But that was the first sort of flipping of a retail unit. You know, we put in a convenience store, worked from 7 in the morning until 12 o'clock at night every day, 7 days a week, and that was it. So we started, you know, doing that, and then we went our separate ways, myself and the brother. He went his way, I went mine, and so that's how I ended up later in years, then maybe 10, 15 years later, in the residential development in Muster Oaks, you know.
Yeah, and then you've seen the gap in the market to try and get into developments. You obviously got in. You figured out how you're going to try and build these block of apartments, trying all the problems that come with them. Even back in your story, you're talking about, you know, a window wiper not working and you're trying to bring slates up onto the roof and there's lads. Lithuanian lads going flying around the place, bringing the tiles off it. And I mean, a lot of people, when I'm speaking to them again about property, they don't understand that world. And it's the world that I come from. And it's the world that I think most true entrepreneurs come from that are successful, that you have to get your hands dirty. You have to pump, you have to grind. Retail business probably sharped you up into doing 15 or 16 hour days.
Exactly, yeah. It conditions you for that. And I mean, it conditions you for working every day the bloody week. So, you know, I saw getting into construction and development as an easier lifestyle simply because of the hours involved. And at least I could have weekends off and spend more time with my family and so on. That was the idea, just to get away from the onerous demands of retailing, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously the market crashed. And when it crashes, I mean, it's very, very difficult to go against it. I mean, you simply just as I was finishing the 8 apartments and poured all my money into them and a lot of borrowed money as well, you couldn't give them away. That's the reality, you know.
Yeah, and that's the point I want to try and get to now as well, because obviously as a young entrepreneur as well, and a lot of people that come through here, we always listen to, and I mean anyone that has half a brain on their head, there's guys like you that have an algorithm you just can't take off a book. It's ingrained, you lived it, you've come through the other side of it. When you hear the word crash in property, everybody is terrified and scared. What was that part of your life like when that actually happened?
It was desperate. It was absolutely desperate on a personal level, because up to that, quite frankly, everything I touched had turned to gold. I'd done really well and I'd made a right to you, Bob. But I mean, I had a wife, I had a mortgage, I had 4 kids. And at this stage, I was looking at having been wiped out, my capital gone, and what I was going to do for the rest of my life. I mean, it was absolutely appalling. And something as basic as not being able to do for my kids what my father did for me, for example, bought me a secondhand car. I couldn't do that. I couldn't buy a secondhand car for myself. Do you know what I mean? That's how bad it was. So on a personal level, it was very, very difficult. But having said that, going back to college and so on, and doing the crash course, essentially, to study law, that worked really well. Thankfully, I worked bloody hard. But, you know, it could have gone anyway, you know?
So where did this mindset come into of, like, when you face a road like that, where you're looking into this dark hole that you've lost everything, and probably you've had loads of voices in the corner of your head saying, oh, Terry, you know, all these dipshits always pop up out of woodwork saying, you know, shouldn't have expanded that quickly. How do you deal with the pressure?
You'll have that, you'll have that not only from, you know, external people, but even your own wife might ask you, why did you put all your eggs in one basket? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she was in the same boat as me, and it was difficult. The biggest advantage that I have, and any entrepreneur, quite frankly, has, is his attitude.
Yeah.
My attitude at the time was to pick myself up and try something else. Whereas a lot of people had an attitude of, I'm going to blame the government, I'm going to blame the banks, I'm going to blame the builders, I'm going to blame the EU, I'm going to blame whatever you've got, I'm going to blame them. I'm not going to take ownership for this. But I mean, I took ownership of it and I said, shit happens, I pick myself up, go again. And but your attitude is absolutely key. So if there's any young lad or young girl watching in, the biggest asset I think you can have in your life isn't education, isn't money, but is your attitude, how you respond to your circumstances, how you respond when the shit hits the fan, because there's only so many things you can control. You can't control your circumstances, but you can control how you respond to your circumstances, and that's your choice. And I see so many guys online there still whinging and whining about the property crash and about the banks. Oh, the banks should never give me the money. I mean, Jesus Christ, why didn't you pay the money back?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah. Attitude is key.
Attitude is. And then when that happens, our bodies obviously have temperature gauges, is what I call them. And, you know, we have got stress levels. And how did you deal with it, like the pressure situation, or what would you call pressure in this time of uncertainty and doubt? How did you have a temperature gauge that was fucking bouncing up and down like crazy? Or
not really, no. I mean, to be honest with you, I accepted that there wasn't a whole pile I could do about the circumstances that I found myself in. I was where I was, and I was, you know, accepting that it was a bit of a shitstorm, but I couldn't do anything about it. And so if I owed the bank $1 million and I couldn't pay it back, there's no point worrying about it, because I simply can't pay it back, lads. And they knew that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the more important thing is, what am I going to do now, and what's the best way to, and, you know, obviously I put my mind down and studied law at home in the garage. I cordoned off an area and worked from, you know, 7 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night every day, and passed the exams to get into the Law Society and get an apprenticeship then as a, you know, a trainee solicitor. And that worked out well. But, you know, you really do have to accept, though, there's certain things you have control over, but there's certain things you have no control over. And if you owe $1 million and you have €1,000 left, there's no point worrying about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you do talk about Sean Quinn. You talk about some of the other bigger lads that have been wiped out or cleaned out as some...
Sean Quinn and Dr. Anthony O'Reilly were the two wealthiest men in Ireland at that time, and they both declared bankruptcy afterwards as a consequence of the property game. And remember, Dr. AJF O'Reilly, A, developed Kerrygold, B, ran Heinz, and C, married a shipping millionaire from Greece, and yet he went tits up and went bankrupt. So yeah. when the tide goes out, it goes out, you know?
Yeah. And would you have any small advice to say, you know, don't put all your eggs in one?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look at that. You know, to be weighing up your risk. I mean, the way I see property development or any development is, the way I try to look at it is this. I do my homework, and if the thing works out, I'll do fairly well and get a good return on it. And if the thing doesn't work out, I get my money back. And that's generally the way I try to structure. And that's the way I was doing it with the shops and the commercial stuff. In other words, if it went really well and I flipped the shop and drove the turnover up, I could make a right good return on it. But if I didn't do that, if it didn't really succeed, I'd still get my money back. That, for me, is a good investment. You know what I mean? In other words, heads I win, tails you lose.
We are delighted to announce that this podcast is sponsored by Platinum Property Training.
Start your property education today. From simply one click of a button, you could be part of the Platinum team. We have made this so affordable for everybody in the country. If you have any interest in property, there's no reason why you shouldn't be part of the Platinum brand. We have got it all systemized. It is right in there with rookies. You can spend 4, 5, 6, or 7 months in there till you get to a certain level. And then you can step up your way through the programs, and you can really start to educate yourself. And we're here to help. We've got the best systems in the country. Click the link below and we will see you there.
Yeah.
Good point. So after all this stuff has happened, you've gone through the crash, you've done the thing. And I said at the very, very start of this as well, at any time in life, you can, you know, come, you can either, as you said, you can deal with it in certain ways. You can fucking blame everybody, or else you can man up or level up and say, I took the risk. Shit happened in the economy. It crashed. I'm going to rebase. How in the name of God did you manage to get the your courage to get out into the garage, which I see a lot of your videos come where you're chopping wood or you're sitting beside the Vespa, corner this place off, make it a safe place, and then tap into the world of law? Because that's not a big, that is a massive shift in my eyes of education, of stress, of levels. I knew this young girl that was studying law. She got to about her second year and said, can't do it. It's just way too much. Yeah, how in the name of Jesus did you do that after being scarred like that?
Well, when I did a Bachelor of Commerce degree in UCD way back in 1980 or thereabouts, there was a law module in it, and I actually quite liked it and was fairly good at it. So I always kind of fancied doing law, and that's how I ended up, you know, getting into it. And to be honest with you, it was really the only game in town for me, because A, I had no money, so I couldn't start up another business. B, I didn't fancy getting a job running a shop for somebody else. It would have been a huge, huge transition, and I was fed up with retail. So you know, I didn't have much to lose, and everything was kind of gone. So I had a go, but I've always enjoyed the law, quite frankly. I've always had an interest in it, and I've had a sort of some adeptness at it, I suppose, or some attitude or aptitude for it, you know.
Yeah, and you obviously don't you don't practice, or I don't know if I'm using the correct word here, you don't do road traffic and you don't do criminal law.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is there
again? I mean, you live and learn. First, I qualified. As soon as I qualified as a solicitor, I was 43 or 4 years of age. And the minute I qualified, I was out of a job, because the deal with my training solicitor was she'd give me an apprenticeship, but once I qualified, I was gone. So I set up on my own, and I did criminal law and I did road traffic, and I lasted about 9 months. So I learned a lesson, and I got another go. Then about 9 months later, I got another go. And started again, but with a completely different focus, and a completely different focus has worked fairly well, you know.
And it's brought you back into property where
it's brought me into property, it's brought me into commercial, it's brought me into employment law, brought me into stuff that I'd actually have a lot of natural experience with and life experience with, you know what I mean? So it's absolutely ideal. But back then, just starting off, it was a stupid bloody mistake, quite frankly, to be doing criminal law, because crime doesn't pay, you know.
that's a great one. How in the world of law now, I know it's probably the backbone of you, and I will ask you this question probably in a few minutes as well, but the backbone is probably saying, right, the money is coming from law now, but you also have this love, I'd say love for property is what I'm feeling off you as well, because you still dabble around in the property circuit.
I do, yeah. I dabble around, and to be honest with you, I do a good bit of reviewing legal packs for the likes of BidX1 auctions for people and so on and so forth, you know what I mean? And I bought a couple of BidX1 properties there in the last 12 months or so, and you know, for any entrepreneur, anybody interested in business, doing a deal and getting a turn is something that you just like, you know what I mean? And and whether it's a property or whether it's a bloody car or whether it's whatever, for me it's property, and it's kind of safe, and you know, I know what I'm doing in terms of looking at the legal packs and so on and so forth. So sometimes you can get a good value, a bargain, etc. And if you do, well, sure, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. And with your expertise in there, obviously we would be not telling people to stay away, but I mean, BidX1, to an investor that's coming on board, again, unless you can read these legal packs correctly, which can be difficult to do at times. Sometimes there is good deals in there. Sometimes there's a lot of stuff hidden up and thrown in.
Obviously, I mean, if you can't read the bloody thing correctly, what you do is you get a guy who can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you can't pull your own teeth. You go to a dentist. So, like, there is value there, but you do need to be careful, and you do need to listen very carefully to what your solicitor might be saying. And I've done, you know, reviews there in the last little while, and, you know, you'd identify maybe a property that, you know, an apartment that looks like a really, really good value proposition. And then you discover that there's no management company. And so you begin to wonder who's managing the common areas, what's the story with block policy insurance, what's the story with parking, who's looking after the lifts and the stairs. Now, that might be sorted out, I don't know, but that is a major stumbling block. And for anyone looking at that particular apartment, they might say, Jesus, that's good value, I'll get, you know, 1500 euros a month, no problem for that, and it's only costing me, you know, 120 grand. The other problem could be significant. So you need to know, you know, what's serious, and you need to know what's minor, you know,
so you can weigh up the risk.
Yeah.
Again, when we see a lot of titles coming in through, there's a lot of, because we buy a lot of our stock direct, so we would do marketing campaigns, people come in, we get a lot of dirty titles, or we get to see a lot of dirty titles. Is that something that you specialize in for one of our clients that are in here, and is that something you can rectifier, help?
Not really. I mean, no, not really. We'd be careful enough, to be honest with you. We take on stuff, all right, for first registrations and that sort of thing. But sometimes, you know, there'd be stuff that you simply wouldn't roll the dice with. It's too risky. And you'd be advising your client of that as well, or else advising your client that if they want to fire away, fire away. But you're not going to be able to assist them with it, because you always run the risk with your insurance, your professional indemnity insurance. And if one of those things goes wrong, and there's a claim against you, it can make life very difficult for running the practice and so on, you know, from the point of view of getting insurance going forward. So like any you know, smart business person, you do need to weigh up the risk, and there's a certain element of risk that's acceptable, but there's a certain element beyond which you won't go, you know.
Yeah well said. So in the property circuit out at the moment, where do you see the problem is lying with trying to get stuff over the line with legals? It probably frustrates you that maybe some people, that some firms, maybe that, you know, say I'm trying to do a deal and I'm trying to do a deal with another lady, and she's gone down to her local practice and they're criminal law and they don't really do too much conveyancing. What is the behind the scenes is all we hear is legals, 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 legals. It can't be always legals problem. But do you see any, with your expertise now, do you see a room to speed things up? We have a friend over in Boston. She done a property transaction in a 2-week period. Is Ireland ever going to come that quick?
Well, to be honest with you, I can't see it, not in the foreseeable future. All I'd say in defense of solicitors and legals is that there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that needs to be sorted out and satisfied about on behalf of their client. Whereas the client simply sees, you know, I want a good deal and I want to get this thing completed within 3 weeks or whatever. And most generally, it's not possible, because we do have to make inquiries. And if we don't make inquiries and the thing goes wrong and somebody comes along then and says, look, there's no legal access to that property. You never told me there's a right of way that was unregistered. And now there's a row. There's a farmer down the road here won't let me down to, you know, drive into the bloody house or whatever. Like, the likes of that is the sort of thing that would keep a solicitor awake at night. So you avoid that and you make sure you dot all the I's, cross all the T's. But there's certain things you can't take a chance with. Another thing is the likes of sewerage, for example. The sewerage, you know, for, say, a private residence. But where's the percolation area? Is it next door? Do you need access to it? Is there going to be a row? You know, so there's a lot of stuff, to be honest with you, that goes on beneath the surface. I know everybody blames solicitors, and a lot of solicitors are absolutely shit communicators, very, very poor communicators, very slow, don't return phone calls, don't return emails, and some of them have a God complex. But some of them are good at communicating. But, you know, rest assured, there is a lot of stuff that goes on beneath the surface in any property transaction. And it's really to protect the client, you know?
Yeah. And it's in the best interest, as you are representing the client, and it's the best interest in the client to make sure it's clean.
Well, absolutely. But the other thing is you're protecting yourself as well, because you really don't want a claim from somebody down the line saying, you never told me about this or this problem, or you should have flagged this up, why didn't you ask this question, or that answer you got to that, that's not a satisfactory answer. Why did you accept it? Do you know what I mean? So like, sometimes we might get an answer to something and we might say, that's not good enough, we have to raise a rejoinder, etc. Because as I say, we're protecting ourselves and protecting our clients, you know.
Yeah, good stuff. I did see you put up a comment the other day, and I love watching your posts. Sometimes I just watch and read. I'm like, good man, Terry. But you put up about cash buyer. Now, people underestimate the world of cash buyers. You had a client that obviously has funds coming back into Ireland and wants to buy a property, and estate agents, the great people that they are, didn't take them seriously. Now, anyone with a brain in their head knows that a cash buyer that has raised funds or has funds in a business or whatever, they've sold a couple of properties, they should be taken with a level of speed. And this guy, I think, irritated you a little bit by not taking your clients, and the comments were coming in. They're still coming in their drove, but which I think is your social media side of things is just... Your marketing side of skills is definitely hand-built, and people should pay attention to them because you do some great, great things with it. But again, cash buyers, in your eyes, why don't estate agents take them seriously? Or do you think estate agents are just, you know, someone...
Well, to be honest with you, that's a question that baffles me. I mean, why anybody wouldn't take a cash buyer seriously is beyond me. I mean, obviously, you don't have to worry about bank approval. You don't have to worry about valuations. You don't have to worry about special conditions in the loan offer. If you have a cash buyer, like, he's bloody golden, you know? Yeah. So that's why I was surprised, to put it mildly, about not getting a response or reply back or even a call back from the estate agents. Because to be honest with you, my client is not a messer. I've seen the money and I've seen his. I've satisfied myself as to his identity. And also, I have anti-money laundering obligations. So, like, we're not talking about some guy, you know, coming from Colombia, you know, looking to buy a house in Wexford or something.
Yeah.
So I can't understand. And to be honest with you, if an estate agent is doing the best thing for their client, they should at the very least be putting the best offer to the client. And if they want to come back and say, look, my client doesn't want to sell to a foreigner, fair enough, but yeah. I was surprised not to get a reply, you know.
Well, wouldn't an estate agent, don't crack me on the locks, I know zero about it, but don't they have to bring all offers to the client?
They do.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'd imagine they would return calls to solicitors as well. And to be honest with you, he was in touch. My client was in touch with him a few times. And I said to myself, this fella, they're not taking him seriously. And he's getting a bit paranoid with me. And he thinks it's because he's an American or whatever. So I got onto them myself then, just to satisfy myself. And as I say, lo and behold, they didn't contact me either or come back to me, you know.
We are delighted to announce that this podcast is sponsored by Platinum Ventures. Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast.
Hi Dublin homeowners, are you struggling to sell your property fast in the open market? Or maybe that deal has collapsed? Okay, if you're facing this type of a problem, we have the perfect solution for you. Welcome to Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast. Any property, any condition, we close out them deals within 28 days. Put out the stress of having endless viewings and having to pump money into property only to sell it. We are not estate agents and therefore you will pay zero agent fees. Visit platinumventures.ie today. Platinum Ventures, we buy houses fast.
Now, this is going to lead me towards the end, and I know this will probably rile you up, but again, for people that have been through that crash and been through a problem, how do you deal with the banks at the moment for your clients? Are you, an iron fist with the banks, or how does the judge see the banks at the moment, or what's happening?
No, I mean, look at the banks. You don't really have an iron fist with the banks. It really depends on the actual situation. In other words, the bank will do a deal with you if it's in the best interest of the bank. So just to give you a hypothetical situation, if you owe 100 grand to the bank and you have a house worth 200 grand, there's no great incentive for a bank to do business or to give you a deal or give you a write-off. Why would they? All they have to do is wait. They have a charge on the property. It's worth 200K. In 6 months' time or 12 months' time, it's going to be worth more. Why would they give you a discount? They're not going to. However, if you owe the bank $1 million and you have a house worth 150 grand, well, then they'll do a deal with you. Why? Because they know or recognize that you can't get blood out of a turnip or stone, and it's in their interest to do a deal. It's in their interest to take the hit and move it on. So, as I say, the bank will do a deal only when it's in their interest. And whether it's in their interest or not will depend on the specific circumstances, you know. Yeah. And there's no point going in, slapping, you know, banging the table saying I'm a hard man and I've experienced, etc. Waste of time. As Trump said to Zelensky last week, you don't have the cards.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no great fan of Trump, but I mean, you do need to recognize when you have cards and when you have no cards. And, you know, you are in a driving seat if you owe the bank $1 million and you've not, because to be honest with you, what can they do to you?
Yeah.
Whereas if the bank has a charge on your property and your property is worth $500,000 and you only owe them $300,000, like, they're going to hang around, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything that a trained guy, say someone that maybe falling into that trap and the banks are playing really, really hard and putting a lot of pressure on them, a lot of stress. I heard this word knocking around before. I always get it wrong.
Liz Pendens.
Liz Pendens. Can you explain a little bit about just what that is? Or is it something that someone could use to... Where I heard the word from was, there was a guy in here that bought two properties off BidX1. He got right down through BidX1. This thing was stuck in there. He bought them anyway. It cost him, I think, 25 grand per house to take off so he could mortgage them out the far end. Is that a dirty way of doing business, or is that something that someone...
Well, it can be, but anybody who's lost their property or who feels hard done by the banks or whatever will do whatever they can. And to be honest with you, if their property has been repossessed and it goes up to a BidX1 auction, very, very often they'll commence legal proceedings or issue legal proceedings rather, and they'll slap them in to BidX1 and they'll serve a notice and a solicitor's letter, and they'll try and put the fear of God in punters and put people off. That makes sense to a certain extent, but there's some experience punters who'll say, that's okay, I don't care, because that's a bullshit bluff and I'm going to go ahead and buy it anyway. Now, your man, maybe if it was two Liz Pendens registered, etc., he may have incurred further difficulty or cost, etc., in getting rid of them. But people do that. They register Liz Pendens as well. Liz Pendens is litigation pending. In other words, they have issued legal proceedings. But what happens is, they never pursue them or never really continue with them. They simply issue the legal proceedings as a sort of a tool or a weapon to try and put people off. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But sooner or later, the other side will look to have your proceedings struck out for want of prosecution. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely stuff. Terry, you've been absolutely, again, I've asked them for a while to try and get you on board. Your life, your career, I think watching in on your stories every day, in my eyes, and I could be completely wrong here, but it's the same plot that I was cut with as well, to try and build up a business. It takes serious amount of punches. It's hard. You also, I know we're not going to go into it today, but you specialize in this thing called, when you hear everyone, let's scale the business, grow the business, that comes with staff, that comes with legal issues. That comes, in my eyes, when I'm sitting inside in the boardroom with some of my friends and some people that were trying to build business, it's always a problem with, you know, management of that legally. But that's another field that you specialize in.
That's another, it's another field and it's another skill. And a lot of people don't have those skills, and a lot of solicitors especially don't, because they might be really good solicitors, whereas managing their office or managing people or generating clients or doing marketing mightn't come naturally to them at all, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So look, you've had a great, great ride through property. Thanks a million for jumping in today and giving us any last final thoughts.
Not really. Just good attitude will serve you well, I think. As I say, whether you're young or old, that'd be my mantra. Have a good attitude. Because, and you get to choose how you respond, you know?
Now, if I'm going to finish with this one. If I was to cut you £1 million check for this interview, because it's been absolutely brilliant, and let's pretend you're Trump today and I had to actually pay £1 million for this, what would Terry Gorry do with the million?
Where would I'll give it to charity, some kids' charity.
Ah, come on, Terry. Where's that money going to? Come on.
I'm a solicitor. I'm a good guy.
Come on, where would Terry Gorry put it? You're going to pay the tax man first anyway. You'll probably buy a new investment.
There'll be the X1 auction coming up next week. I'll be in there rooting around in the weeds, you know what I mean?
Stay away from them two down in Wexford, Ballybee, because we have our eye on them.
All right.
Terry, you've been an absolute great guest. Stuff. We're going to put you, out and we'll get your contacts. Thanks a million and have a great day.
Good stuff. Thanks.
And a brief thank you to today's sponsors of our podcast, Platinum Property Training and Platinum Ventures. Thank you very much for listening in.